we got to react to game one. We got to get you ready for game two. Gardo's on a absolute heater right now. Nothing really going on in the Browns, but apparently they might play the Jaguars in London, which I could not actually care less about.
Jaguars in London.
The Jaguars. We got Mac Robinson here on site. Kayla back on the board. Kayla Cole, John on the board. Keith back in studio behind the glassy knoll, as he always is, the assassin. And then Meredith on the 2020s. But great weekend if you're Cleveland, by the way.
Oh, I mean, 100%. What a great job by the Gardos sweeping the Oakland non-athletics.
So it's funny. I think what you were pausing on was, you know that it's the A's, but you were like, wait, I just said Oakland. Is that still right? Is that what you were?
Well, two parts. Number one, yes, the first part you said. And then number two, I had nothing witty to say. And so I was stalling until I got something, which was very average.
So, no, I mean, listen, still better than the A's. That team is bad. They're but bad. Although I will say,
it's still the best uniforms in baseball.
They really are. They just
it's
work.
So sad.
I don't know what it is about that combo.
It's just
but compare
it's just
that sex. To like the Sonics combo back in the day.
Yeah.
Same concept.
Yeah.
That's the only thing missing from the A's is the Space Needle, which wouldn't make sense because they're
it's like a Kelly green.
Yeah, just with the yellow, it just works.
It pops.
But unfortunately, their team doesn't pop. They just suck. So we had that, and I mean, obviously, like. It was one thing to see the Gardos do what they did, but then the Cavs getting that win. And honestly, I don't think any of us feel any sort of anxiety about the draft this week. You actually brought something up in the pre-show, though, when we were talking that we're in the rare situation where it's Browns draft week. Mm-hmm. And we are going to talk about the Browns in the draft. Obviously, things are going to come up. Reports are going to come up. But right now, the Browns in draft week are probably the third biggest story in Cleveland, and that's
like
wild.
It's not even close to me. I said this to you before the show, Nick, and it is surprising because, my goodness, throughout, you know, all the years that we've been, you know, talking about the Browns and being on the radio here in Cleveland, I feel like we talk about the draft so much, and I don't think we've had a lot of hardcore nitty-gritty football draft talk on this station, or certainly not on this show, really at all this draft mm-hmm. season, this spring. And you know, I mean, part of it is the Browns do have a first round pick. It's kind of a not blah draft, but I mean, it's like we're not picking until in the 50s. So what are we to get excited about, right? Thursday's the draft, and we're not picking. Odds are the Browns will not trade in the first round. That's not really their MO. No. And so we got a red hot baseball team that's off to the best start since 1999. That is wild to think about. How long it's been since the Gardos have been at this point. They're, what, 15-6? Or now 16-6
yeah.
Now. It's incredible what they've done. And then on top of that, what a remarkable performance by the Cavaliers on Saturday, Nick, where they did exactly what we talked about on Friday's show, where we said the Cavs have to come out and set the tone early. I was worried about kind of the energy level. Would they come out flat as they've done in the past? And it was far from that. I mean, they came out with a certain, can I say piss and vinegar?
I think you just did.
I said it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they look like.
That's what you came out with today. Yeah. That's where you're at.
I'm fired up.
So the Browns thing's interesting. There's one other thing that I think adds to it. There's no spot that we're panicking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, we're concerned about Deshaun's health, but there's nothing you can do about that. You're not going to trade up for one of these quarterbacks. That wouldn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you take a quarterback in the draft with a top 100 pick, that's as much as you can do to address the quarterback spot. But everything else, like, you're so deep across the board that, yeah, you have theoretical needs. You have needs that might come up throughout the season. You might have needs going into 2025. But, like, right now, and I'll be honest with you, I think this is different than last year. I think you went into last year's draft and said, we need another receiver, we need another defensive lineman. And they went and did that. In this case, or and maybe a safety was something, but, like, that you needed another wide receiver in that room. You could always use another wide receiver, a Keon Coleman, if he falls to you, right? If Johnny Newton, the kid out of Illinois, who for some reason people are not saying is a first-rounder, and I cannot figure it out because that kid is a stud, like if he falls to you, which would be a gigantic fall, that's oh, great. But, like, there's not one spot you look at on the roster and say, if we don't draft X, we're screwed. And that's, like, That's pretty exclusive to this year. We didn't feel that way last year. We didn't even feel that way coming off the win in Pittsburgh and then the close loss to Kansas City in 2021. In 2020. So, like, I just think that's really cool. I think that aids to why people are like, I'm just going to watch the draft because I enjoy the draft. And whatever the Browns do, I'm probably not going to panic about unless they were to draft a kicker in the second round, at which point they'd pretty much do that just to troll you.
They're not drafting a kicker.
They're not. Or a punter or a long snapper.
No. By the way, what's his face still on the roster? The
which
kid
one?
They drafted and then brought back?
Cade York?
Cade York,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Still don't understand that. But anyway, nonetheless, we where do you want to go here? You want to talk Cavs?
I want to do something real quick on the Gardos, and then we'll get to the Cavs.
It's a smorgasbord.
Yeah, it is a smorgasbord. That's really hard to say, by the way. That's not the point. That's not where we're going. With the Guardians, I've started to see people say, well, but it's the A's. It's the Red Sox. It's this. Guys, I don't care. Like, this is the equivalent of – I mean, we're, what, one-tenth of the way through the season? Like, 22 games or 1-8, whatever it is. You know, I think it was Anthony Castrovince made the point, and we can actually play this later in the show, that this is akin to two Browns games. If the Browns started 2-0, we'd lose our mind. And this is as close as you can get to 2-0, being 16-6 to start the season. And how they're doing it matters. It's not like, yes, the we need more from the starting rotation. But the bullpen's been great. And here's the thing. They're actually hitting for power. Naylor of the weekend obviously had a couple big hits. But, like, I think they are 15th or 16th in home runs in baseball. If you extrapolate that out over 162 games, they're on pace for 162 home runs. That'd be 40 more home runs than they hit last year. That's before you factor in that. Well, that's before you factor in Manzardo. That's before you factor in any other area you could find more power. And, oh, by the way, Jose's hit nice or hit okay. He's not hit like Jose. So he's traditionally a guy that starts a little slower in March and April. So the Cavs are for real. And, you know, it's funny. We're going to talk a little bit from the Cavs side about, like, how much do you put into what you saw in game one. You just have to start with giving credit where credit is due.
Correct.
We didn't know they could come out, and we didn't know if they would be the more physical team. They were. Or play harder. They did play harder. We didn't know what Donovan would look like. Donovan looked – 30 points. Donovan was the reason why you pulled away late in that game. Donovan was fantastic. And in the first half, Evan Mobley was fantastic. You got quality minutes out of Nyang. The Cavs did not play their best brand of basketball in game one, and they still won by 14 points. I think that should set your expectations for the series.
To me, they set the expectations and the tone, the way they came out. You know, obviously it helps when you can hit your first five threes in a row to put them sort of in that hole early in the ball game. I thought the level of intensity was there. I thought defensively to hold a team to, what, 83 points is in the playoffs is what you have
playoffs.
To. If you can do that, you're going to win every time, obviously. But, again, on top of that, the way that they played with chippiness, I thought the Cavaliers showed what would you say, Nick? In terms of, like, how they play with a chip on their shoulder. That's probably the best way I can put it.
Yeah, I like that. Also, how bad is this Magic offense? Paolo Banchero looks like a really nice player. He can't do it alone.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have, despite having drafted, I think, 5 point guards in the last 6 years, they don't have a playmaker, or at least a playmaker that can also score. Franz Wagner's a nice player, but he probably shouldn't be your second-best offensive player. Also, I'm going to tell you, we're going to set the tone for game 2 right now, even though we're more reacting to game 1. I'm going to put Mo Wagner on watch. If he does one more chippy thing, I am calling for JB Bickerstaff to put Marcus Morris in and let Marcus Morris cook. And he would cook Mo Wagner. Because I'll be honest with you, man, that dude, clearly the Cavs took umbrage with stuff that he did in the regular season. There's a reason the guy's still in the NBA. He has to do all the little stuff, the chippy stuff, kind of the cheap stuff to stay. But you can't let Mo Wagner do that crap. And I thought, listen, I thought the Okoro Tech was the weakest thing in the world. He bumped into him with his shoulder. That wouldn't cause a fist fight in high school, let alone the NBA. And meanwhile, I thought the Magic got away with a lot that were actual plays of the game that I thought if the Okoro thing was a Tech, then that should have been a Tech, what they did. Now, that being said, we're on Wagner Vach. Because I want to –
Wagner Vach?
Wagner Vach. Well, that's how you would say it if you were German. And I think I'm going to assume Wagner is German. We're on Wagner Vach. Because if he does it again, I want Marcus Morris to lift him up and put him about three rows deep. Because you do that, you break the Magic spirit. This team has zero offensive talent. I shouldn't say zero offensive talent. They're not very good offensively. And I think the only thing that kept him in that game is that chippiness. I think Marcus Morris could break him like Drago in about – but one semi-choke slash shove. And yes, okay. I am calling for violence. It's basketball. It's okay. It's in the playoffs, it's not calling for violence. It's just calling for good, hard playing. Marcus Morris has smacked the living hell out of Mo Wagner. Or Franz Wagner. Any of the Wagners, I think you get the message. Unless it's like a family member of the Wagner sitting courtside. I would not do that. 216-474-0092. So Nick and Dustin, we're broadcasting live here, courtesy of Mick Ultra, live at the Harry Buffalo on East 4. Stop by and see us. We're upstairs. We are excited for Game 2. We want to get into Game 1 and your thoughts on Game 1 and whether that turned the corner for you. Did you see what you needed to see out of the Cavaliers? I still have a few more things we'd like to see. We'll get to that throughout the show. Cavs head coach J.B. Bickerstaff talking about the Cavs' physicality in Game 1 against the Magic. Now, we did have somebody on social media, I believe it was Radu, saying Wagner could also be Austrian because I had said, you know, he was German. I have confirmed that both Wagners are, in fact, from Berlin in Germany. They're not Austrian. So I'm just do with that what that will. I don't really know. I just want to make sure to clear that up. When I called them German, there was no aspersions cast. I actually got something right on this show. Of course, social media reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. And here's a funny thing. Like, I don't even want to say, like, I thought the Cavs played their game. And so, like, I don't really think they were all that physical. Meaning, I think they played really hard. But I don't think they took cheap shots. I think the Magic did that. I think they responded. But, like, you know, in terms of you saw the Magic grabbing their player, the Cavs players' hips when they were going up, or grabbing their butts, trying to weigh them down when they were going up for layups. The Cavs really didn't do that. The Cavs were snug when they did play out on the perimeter. But mostly what the Cavs did defensively that I thought was so impressive is they basically laughed in the Magic's face saying, okay, we're going to give you that corner three, Jonathan Isaac. We're going to give you these free shots, and we're just going to go ahead and put three, four, five guys in the paint so that you have to make those threes. And it completely destroyed and stagnated the Magic offense, which in and of itself wasn't good in the first place.
I agree with you 1,000% what you said about three-pointers, because they're not particularly a great three-point shooting team, and they just forced them to chuck it.
Yeah.
And when the Cavs were hitting their threes, what it does is it puts pressure on them to try and counter.
Yeah.
Okay. And when they're not hitting their threes, in fact, they shot as a team 32% from the field and then 21% from three. And on top of that, they were 19 of 30 from free throws.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, I'll be honest with you, I knew the Magic were bad offensively, right? And I don't want to correlate it to where the Cavs are when the Cavs are at their worst, because the difference is even when the Cavs are at their worst, they still have multiple playmakers both in their lineup and off their bench that at any point can get it going. With the Magic, there's no hope. Like, do you know who the Magic really need? Honest to God, do you know who the Magic need to add to bring the most out of Banchero so he's not the only guy that can make plays? It's Darius Garland. Because they're missing a point guard that can set up for all their guys. And that point guard would need to be able to shoot. Because, like, the guys they have, Suggs isn't a great shooter. Cole Anthony isn't a great shooter. Like, they're okay, but they're also, like, limited in multiple ways. Like, that – I was blown away at how bad the Magic offense was. especially in the half court, where, again, like, there were possessions where the Cavs were just like, no, we've got five guys in the paint, or we got five guys within 10 feet, 15 feet of the basket. You do you.
Yeah.
And that to me, like, I'll be honest with you, I think they should just repeat. They should start this game trying to do exactly what they did in the first series, because if the Magic could have countered at any point, offensively or defensively, they would have. They couldn't. Like, no, like, the Cavs were able to play both their bigs without any problem. Like, I think that, listen, here's the point. I still have questions about the Cavs because I thought they played at a B-minus, C-plus rate offensively. Actually, no. Offensively, it was a C game. Their defense puts the whole thing up to like a B, maybe a B-minus. I don't think the Cavs played their best game in game two.
Far from it. I mean, when you put together stretches, it was bad basketball at times by both teams,
yes.
To be fair. But overall, the Cavaliers were more consistent. They played better defense. They were more physically dominant than the Magic. And I'm starting to think now, Nick, as we watch this series play out, and obviously tonight will tell us a hell of a lot more, but I thought it was going to go seven. I have a feeling now it could go five.
Yeah, I don't know what the Magic are going to do to score. I think if you're the Magic, you're home.
I mean, there's only so much that Paolo can do.
Yeah, and honestly, you still see a guy that is very early on in his career as a scorer and as a guy that you can run your offense through.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I will say, like, I thought he did some power stuff against your bigs that I thought was really impressive. But beyond that, like, I saw him force a lot of crap up, which, again, I think is because of the situation he's in. But, like, getting back to the Cavs, like, I look at that and I go, well, if you can beat them with a average offensive game, and, again, average might actually be kind, because how many straight three-pointers did you miss after starting hot? I mean, if the Cavs make even 25% of those threes that they missed in the middle of the game, you win by 20, 24, maybe 27. Mm. And still you would not have played a good game.
Yeah.
You know, that the beginning of the second half was really rough. The Cavs were not playing their game the first 5, 6, 7 minutes of the third quarter. You look to Darius's performance, which we can get into at some point. Evan kind of disappeared more in the second half, where he was great in the first half, especially in that first quarter, hitting those two big threes. And that was a huge part of their fast start.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to give Orlando credit. They are a really good defensive team. And they make you earn every single thing.
Nick, they are a very good basketball team. Let's not take anything away from them right now. Where they're at is, to me, they're kind of where the Cavs were 2 years ago. I think they're a young team that has a lot of talent, but also trying to feel their way. And this is really their first taste of real playoff basketball. And the Cavs have been there, and they're just kind of taking it to them because they've got the experience, and I think they're confident that they can beat this club.
So I love that you said 2 years ago. Right? Because I'm trying to be respectful here. Orlando's defense puts them in the top six. Offensively, they might not even be a playoff team. And you add that to the fact that the Cavs are a good offense, are a great defensive team when they, or at least were up until like March 1st. Like, this is a team that really is, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't know anyone would be a good matchup for Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just don't have the kind of talent you need here. And so this is the other way of looking at it. I'll also say, if this thing goes more than six for the Cavs, it'll be because the Cavs inexplicably dropped a game. It'll be it's going to be on the Cavs if this thing isn't short work, because I can't see the pivot that Jamal Mosley has. Like, the coach, I think, got them where they are. The coach helped them to devise the defense-first mentality. But I can't see that team scoring. I mean, they scored 83 last night. I can't see them scoring more than 92 in a playoff game.
They have to be scrambling, trying to figure out a way to hang with the Cavaliers offensively. And unless they start hitting some threes and just have, like, a monster night. Like, I think tonight will be a closer game. I do. Just because it's the NBA playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what happens. I mean, every game, we say this every year, is like a new series. And just because you beat a team one night on Saturday, it doesn't mean tonight's going to go the same way. You know, I think the Cavs should win this game. I think the Magic will play better, but I don't think overall they're consistent enough to keep up with the Cavs to push them to six or seven games. I just don't see it.
That word right there is that – so I think the best way – because we're asking 216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, at Dustin Fox 37, we're live from Harry Buffalo here on East 4th, courtesy of our friends at Mick Ultra. And we've got a lot to get into on today's show. But I want to start with not just how they won, but how much weight – you're putting into the Cavs game one, because I'm not so sure that you can't win it the same way. Like, I think if Orlando wins, it's going to be because inexplicably they got hot from the 3-point mark. Because I'll be honest with you, I think you should give them every three that they want until they prove they can hit more than 25% of them. Mm-hmm. But to get back to it, what was most impressive to me is, yes, the Cavs had that dip in the third quarter, but they didn't let that take them out of their game. The Magic got within four, but they found a way to get back to it. Donovan was great late, and like, you can play better than what you played like in game one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the Magic can. I think that's what we're – and so I don't know how much I can take – how much I can wait from game one and say, well, now in a series against Boston, .. But I can be confident – about this series.
Yeah.
And I think I still don't know what beyond this looks like. I still don't know if you have the landing strip here to do what you need to do to become a serious Eastern Conference contender this year. Just a little landing strip. I mean, you got just a couple games here, that's all. But I do think at the very least it made me more confident that the Cavs can handle these guys in short work. Because they just the Cavs, I thought, and we got a few people on this on social media, I just felt like the Cavs answered the call in game one, and now it's on them to just keep answering this call in the series. You can't make the Magic any better. You can't make them a better test for you. So just keep playing hard, and I think this thing will take care of itself quickly, because that is not a five seed. That is not – like, you watch the West, and you watch a team like Phoenix, who's not perfect, but like – you know, they're the six seed going up against – or wait, what is Phoenix? They're the six going up against three. Like, Phoenix got dusted.
Phoenix,
if you put Phoenix as a five seed, this would be a real series with the Cavs. But fortunately, they're in the West. You jerk.
That's kind of sort of an inside joke.
Yeah, as it were.
Someone once called Phoenix a different name.
Yeah. I actually think she's doing her 2020s today.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I don't even know she knows. I don't even know. Well, no, I don't think she knows that that's a joke we make. Heath on Twitter saying that's the biggest thing the Cavs responded back to. Physicality last year against the Knicks, they didn't do that at all. I mean, I think what allowed you to is that the Magic were not physical and then they weren't hitting their shots. I think the problem with the Cavs is last year with the Knicks – they would try and respond with the physicality, and then the Knicks would go on this run where Jalen Brunson would hit like two straight threes, and you could have a couple buckets.
He was so annoying that series because you're right. Every time the Cavs would get back in it or make a run, he would pretty much just put a stop to that.
Yeah, and so I think at the very least, I think this series gives you enough opportunity and margin for error. That's a big thing in the NBA playoffs where the Magic don't have a lot of counters here. So I almost see this as this could be a confidence-building thing. You still have matchup problems later on in the playoffs. Who cares about that?
Mm-hmm.
Build the confidence. Build the camaraderie. See if you can get Darius help games and just keep doing what you're doing and don't let your foot off the – if you can learn that, just keep your foot on the pedal, that dude I think is 90% of the problem with this team in the second half of the season. But between the health and just the what energy – what was that?
So I was taking a drink out of my cup here, and it rubbed against the microphone.
Good Lord.
And it sounded like an Orlovsky moment.
You gotta
pay. What's his face? The Jaguars.
Oh, Trent Baalke?
Trent Baalke.
We can't use that word on the radio. This is a family station. Radu on Twitter saying, just force Orlando to brick from three. They were willing to give it up to them, and were brutal on the free throw line. That actually is the toughest thing. Like, the whole point of the Magic was, all right, you're going to put three or four people in the paint or near, you know, within 10 to 12 feet of the basket. We're just going to run at you. And it was working. then you just didn't hit your free throws. That might be the thing that Orlando could do different this time. I think if Orlando hit their free throws tonight, that could put a little bit more pressure on you. Outside of that, we're going to go to Anthony Black tonight. We're going to go to I'm trying to think of the other guys on their bench. The other guys are either super young or not. Oh, and by the way, minute here. George Niang. Quality damn playoff minutes from George Niang. The minivan was moving this weekend. To get you back on, get you on board a little bit with the minivan?
I'm a fan of him as a player.
I don't think that's what you said here several times.
I got no problem with George Niang.
I felt like you've had a problem.
I got no problem with him.
I felt that you've had quarrel. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
I think he's a little bit of an inconsistent outside shooter.
That's fair. We did see that this weekend. I think this is a noteworthy trade for a few reasons, but the Jets have finally and mercifully moved on from Zach Wilson. He's been traded to the Broncos. The deal includes a late-round pick swap, a 6th for a 7th, and New York's going to pay $5.5 million of salary. So the Jets and Christopher Johnson had said, we're holding on to him until we get value. It would seem as if that is not the case here. Getting a guy that was the number 2 pick 3 years ago for a 6th to a 7th swap is about as light as you can be from the Denver side of things.
Listen, the Wilson thing was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we know that. They ate a bunch of money on that contract. He's going to play in Pittsburgh for peanuts in terms of what Pittsburgh's going to pay him. But I think Denver is an interesting spot for Zach Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. You know, listen, it's easy, low-hanging fruit right now to make fun of the Denver Broncos, and I'm not going to sit here and defend them by any stretch. I think it was a disaster to get Wilson. I think Wilson may have worked out without Sean Payton, but nonetheless, it didn't. Okay, so they decided to move on from him because Sean Payton is who they want. I don't know if Sean Payton is going to mess with Zach Wilson. I don't know if Zach Wilson's definitely going to start. I don't. But I know this much. No quarterback has success in New York for the Jets. It's so difficult for that organization to find a quarterback. And then even if they do draft talented guys, and I looked at Geno Smith all the time because that guy was screwed in New York, waited his turn, finally turned it around, and has got things cooking for Seattle. Zach Wilson in Denver will have a chance. He never did anything in New York. Yeah, he had some bad moments as a young player, but why are people so quick to write people off? Especially when you're a top 5 pick.
So I should start here. I thought it was foolish what the Panthers paid for Sam Darnold because I thought Sam was a lot worse than people had talked about in New York. And I will say I think Zach performed worse in New York than Sam did. I'll also say, like, stuff like this, I don't think teams give stuff like this enough thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the kind of trade that if the Browns had made, I wouldn't have had a problem if they'd made it. Now, granted, they already have 17 other quarterbacks on the roster. They didn't need to. That's how I'm saying. My point is, every time a quarterback like this, if you liked him in the pre-draft, if you go to a situation specifically like the Jets, which you're so great to point out there, like, they tanked whatever value that he did have. Like, I think this is a smart move by the Broncos. Granted, going into the draft with Zach Wilson and Ben DiNucci, the Nooch, and I can't remember the second guy, Jarrett Stidham. That's not a good quarterback room. But, like, yeah, I mean, listen, I get it. I think this is a smart move for the Broncos, and worst-case scenario, let's say you draft a kid in the first round. Zach Wilson starts a couple games. If he doesn't work out, you move on. Like, this is the ultimate quintessential buy low. I don't have a lot of faith in the kid, but you know what? It's away from New York. It's closer to home. I mean, Denver's about as close as you can get to where he grew up at.
Yeah, Provo.
Like, I think it's a smart move by Sean Payton. And listen, I will go back to say, if anyone can get a little bit more out of Zach Wilson, I'd trust Sean Payton over Robert Saleh and the cadre of slap-ass offensive coordinators have had.
And the thing, too, about the dynamic between Sean Payton and Zach Wilson is that Zach Wilson's in his third year, okay? He doesn't know what he doesn't know. Like, he's still a young, so to speak, a young dog, right? Teaching him some new tricks. Nah, he's not an old dog, okay? He's a young dog. right? And he still has an opportunity to grow and develop. So
he's 24, man.
And he's been in the league 3 years.
Yep.
So I think he's still a pup. I think he's got ridiculous arm talent. I don't know what's going on upstairs. I don't know if that was just the pressure of New York, whether that was
being given the job instead of having
to
earn it.
And I mean, and then they had things going on. I mean, like, 1 second Robert Saleh liked Zach Wilson, then he doesn't defend him, and then they go out and get Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's a lot of things going against, you know, Zach having a successful career in New York. Again, I'm not sitting here saying that he's going to be great, but I'm not going to sit here and say that – I'm not going to make fun of the trade. I'm not going to say that it's going to be a disaster. I think it's certainly something to keep an eye on.
I've made fun of Zach a lot because he's kind of a goober. I'm not going to make fun of the trade either. Like, here's the thing. I think – man, I pay a lot of attention to what teams do with young quarterbacks, and the Jets, both with Darnold and now with Zach Wilson, have done the cardinal sin of bringing young quarterback along, which is you get there and they go, okay, what'd you do well in college? And then they don't do that. And that's just wild to me. And I honestly, I think at points Baker had to fight for that with Hugh, and I think they simplified that when Greg took over, and then I think they – kind of forced him back into another situation with Kevin Stefanski. Like, I despise the ego involved with coaches, with coordinators in the NFL who are all trying to get that next payday, who can't just take a young guy like Zach Wilson or like Sam Darnold or at points like Baker and just, what does this guy do well, and do it. So from that standpoint, listen, I didn't think much of what Zach did in New York. Can I tell you, though? He was also doing things that were not natural to him. How can you expect a guy to do – so I'm almost defending a guy I don't believe in because, like, you didn't put him in a position to succeed. So I would imagine Sean Payton, who, even though he clearly didn't have a lot of love for Russell Wilson, still got some pretty good numbers out of Russ this last year.
Look, Sean Payton didn't all of a sudden become a bad coach, okay? He knows how to coach football. He knows how to design an offense. He knows how to coach quarterbacks. Yeah, maybe he is a little rough around the edges when it comes to trying to do things his way. But he's not going anywhere. I mean, they paid this guy a buttload of money, and he's going to be the coach for the foreseeable future.
I just will say, I heard over the weekend, I heard Kevin O'Connell's comments about he's the quarterback killer. He's the reason why Minnesota hadn't taken.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too.
And obviously, you saw what.
You don't, never want to be called the quarterback killer when you're a former NFL quarterback.
Well, and you don't – so the did you read the article?
I just saw the headline.
So basically his point was every time they tried to bring up a quarterback that they should draft, he was like, nah, that's not the right guy, which I respect on some level. You don't draft a guy you don't believe in. On the other hand, man, you live and die by the quarterback. How in, what is it, I think 3 years in Kevin O'Connell, how you didn't find the heir apparent to Kirk Cousins so that when you let Kirk go, you had to sign Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. Good luck with that. But I mean, I look at Minnesota and Denver in very similar situations. Guys who, there's obvious reasons, smart reasons to move on from the quarterbacks you had, but we'll see about the Zach Wilson thing. 216-474-0092, Zach Wilson traded for a pick swap, 6th and a 7th round pick swap there. But our question is about the Cavaliers and how much weight do you give game one? I don't know that you answered that. I had kind of answered my piece with it. I think it's about this series and maybe not the next series.
I didn't say specifically how much weight I put into game one, but I did say after watching game one, I think it's going to go 5 as opposed to what I thought it was going to be 7.
If it goes so that, anything
if that,
more.
If that's any inclination of what my thoughts are after game one, it's pretty strong.
If it goes longer than 5, what is the culprit? Is it the Magic suddenly found a formula, or is it maybe the Cavs' inconsistency?
I think if it goes longer than 5, the Magic get hot from 3.